morning. You can go ahead and take a seat. Cross Point fans, welcome to the 10th annual Game Day Teach Off. Hard to believe we've been doing this for a decade. If this is your first time with us, we want to say a preemptive, we're sorry, we apologize. Things are going to probably get a little bit crazy today, maybe a tad irreverent, but we're going to explain how all of this works in just a minute. But before we get moving in that direction, joining me in the booth today, best color commentator in the biz, Chris Maloney. What do you expect to see today?
You know, Eric, with this being my first game day, I have no idea what to expect, and I'm honestly quite terrified.
All right. Well, I know a few good therapists, if you or anybody else should need that afterwards. But, hey, quick question, just a little quick poll of the room. Any Rams fans in the house today? How about Patriots? Oh, there you go. Well, look at that. All right. And how many of you, like the real game, are just here for the food and the halftime show and the commercials?
Yeah, that's a big part of the crowd.
It sure is. That has to make everybody else feel good. How many here for the announcers, Nimran?
Wow.
It's my mom's here. Hey, one programming note for you. You've already seen a few violators here. Do not light your bracelet until instructed.
Yeah, we're really here just for the halftime show, so let's save those until we get there. All right, everybody.
All right, we've got a great game in store for you today. Folks, we are so glad that you're with us. Let's head on down to the field because we know this, you've been waiting all day for Sunday night.
Wow, Eric, this place is alive. This is alive today. I can't wait to see what these two have in store for us this morning.
That's right, Chris, and it's just going to get crazier. Great reminder that we have fantastic environments for the kids if things maybe get too crazy for you.
Before we get too far, Eric, are there any rules that we need to know about?
Loosely, there are rules for this thing that we do every year here. Rule number one, there are 2 7-minute quarters. Each teacher is going to get 2 7-minute quarters to effectively communicate their points. Number two, each of our teams is going to have to use 3 different sources, one of which must be the Bible.
Just one of them? Might be tough for Walters if I know anything about Walters.
Okay.
He is the pastor, though.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, he'll give it a shot today, at least his best shot. Typically, the thing that separates the winners from the losers, though, is this thing that you have to use a random phrase. Before each quarter, each competitor is going to get one random phrase that they're going to have to somehow weave into their teaching. And then fourth, and maybe the most important rule of all, the referee is going to have all of the final jurisdiction on everything that plays out today.
Wow, there's no question things are going to get crazy on the field today. Let's head down to the field and meet our players.
And now for the 2019 starting lineups. In his second game day teach-off, representing the Rams, a kick-ass motivator from Syracuse, New York. He floats like a butterfly and stings like a bee. He's the wooden of the hardwood and the Lombardi of the gridiron. He's mean, he's lean, Vince Constantine! Introducing 9-year Game Day Teach-Off veteran, representing the Patriots and hailing from Battle Creek, Michigan. He's a snowmobile riding, coffee pounding pastor who has more finesse than he knows what to do with. He's a master of the platform and the creator of words that simply don't exist. The one, the only, Kurt Walter.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. Whenever me and Khaled do the remix, everybody hands go up.
Showtime.
And they stay there, and they stay there, and they stay there.
Is win, huh? I don't know if you saw that graphic, but I only saw one win. Seems like an odd choice for Walters.
That's true. In 9 years, he's only won one of these.
It's okay. It's all right.
But seriously, he actually got a win? Who did he beat again?
Chris, who he beat is really insignificant. It doesn't really matter.
It was you, wasn't it?
I can't really remember.
It was. You're still bitter, aren't you?
Perfect. A little bit. I cry myself to sleep on occasion. Another note, our official, our referee, has joined the players on the field, and it looks like it's Area 56 fan favorite, Jeff.
Wait a second. That doesn't look like Jeff. That looks like Billy Vinovich. You guys remember Billy Vinovich, the ref from the Saints game last week? Let me jog your memory.
And the two officials talk to each other. Crowd's going crazy as there's no flag right on the Saints sideline.
Yeah, I think we need an eye test. Right now, eye test. I don't trust this guy. Let's do it.
I actually have him look at the screen here.
Let me clean these again if I can. All I see up there is R-A-M-S.
No. Oh, my.
You might be a tad biased.
What in the world? I have never seen anything like this, ladies and gentlemen. The ref is being escorted off the field. Eric, this is absurd.
It's never happened before. It's unprecedented.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. Wait a second. Is that Julie B?
Oh, yeah. Look at this.
We've got a new referee being escorted back.
Yeah. And I tell you what. You may know this. I happen to be married to her. Now, she will admit that she doesn't know a lot about football, which I don't know if it's a big deal or not.
Well, on that note, let's head down to the field. We'll see how this goes.
All right, boys, bring it in for the coin toss.
Hey, good luck today.
Good luck. You'll need it.
Here's what I want. I want some good, clean teaching. And Walters, I'm going to have you call it in the air because I guess you're important and stuff.
Tails is what I'm going to be kicking today.
Are you serious, dude? You've lost to a girl like twice. In fact, you've lost to a girl so many times, I changed the name on the jersey to Girly. How about that, huh? Yes.
All right, Vince, it is heads.
Okay.
So do you want to bat first?
Do I want to bat first? No, wrong sport. I will defer.
Defer.
Wow, he defers. Defer. What is with the bats first?
That's me. Julie does know a lot about football. She does know how to penalize because she got me for illegal use of the hand last night, but that's a whole other story.
On that note, glad your kids aren't here. So Kurt will be receiving the ball to start with the first quarter. Something he's done in previous game days hasn't helped him before, though.
All right, Kurt, pick your random phrase. You must use this in your teaching.
Holy cow.
Okay, don't tell me the sky is the limit when there are footprints on the moon.
Wow. All right. That's a random phrase indeed, and folks, you will soon figure out that these random phrases will make no sense whatsoever.
Kurt, your serve.
All right. Well, hey, just a word on what we're doing here today. If it's your first time with us, you're new to Crosspoint, we're invited today. We just, you know, a number of years ago realized that regardless of your spiritual orientation, the one thing all Americans come together on is the national holiday of the Super Bowl, right? You guys excited for today? Woo! Yeah. All right, so we thought this would be fun. Let me pray for us before we go any further. God, thank you for this time. We thank you for the Super Bowl, for this holiday weekend, that we can laugh, we can have fun. And as today in this place, we can grow and learn too. And I just pray that as a result of our time here today, all of those things would happen. Amen. Well, today, we're going to be taking a look at what it means to be a great, great leader. And, you know, leaders are something that regardless, you might say, well, I'm not really a leader. We're all leaders. And regardless of our role in life, there are people that you lead. And some of you this morning, as we talk about this, you might be going, oh my gosh, I wish I would have invited my boss today. He or she really needs to hear this. Or you might be thinking, how can I send the podcast of this to my boss without them knowing that I sent it to him tomorrow morning? And so, and if you are the leader, if you lead anything, if you are a leader of a business or a department or your family or a team in the community or your neighborhood association, man, we're super excited you're here. And as we've kicked off 2019 here at Crosspoint, we've been taking a look at this whole idea of what it means to follow the leader. And so, you know, if you've been following Jesus for, you know, a good part of your lifetime, then, you know, you may be somewhat, you know, familiar with this. If you are just kind of starting to look at Jesus as a leader, or maybe you have no clue if you even want to follow Jesus, here's the one thing I want you to consider this morning. Regardless of what you believe, what you think about Jesus, if you'll implement some of the things that Jesus says into your work week this week, into your life this week, I guarantee you, you will be so much better at life, and life will be so much better. And so there's an assumption we're going to talk about today that we're going to kind of look at, and it's this: if Jesus was someone to be followed, he must be a leader worth following. And unfortunately, you know, we don't always associate leadership with Jesus. We see Jesus as a religious figure. And in these pictures that we see of Jesus, these paintings don't help. And certainly the movies that have come out don't always help. They leave Jesus like climbing in a boat and he has to like lift his skirt as he gets in, you know. And you're like, dude, don't fall. Like, and so like you don't think of leadership when you see Jesus. And yet, think of it this way. If you've never thought of Jesus as a leader, consider the fact that he developed his brand in 3 years. He started hundreds of thousands of franchises during that period of time without racking up a single frequent flyer mile. Amazing, right? And so he knows something about leadership. And so today we're going to take a look at a story from the Bible in Mark chapter 10 and this conversation that Jesus has with some of his followers. And he's basically saying to them, hey, if you ever are in charge of something, which he knew that all of them would be, and if you ever have authority over, you know, a group of people in your life, which he knew 11 of the 12 would at some point in their life, he says, this is how I want you to lead and here's how I want you to execute that authority. So Mark chapter 10, this is Jesus in the Bible, New Testament part of the Bible. This is the it tells about the life of Jesus, gives us these snapshots into his life. And this is just days before Jesus is arrested and killed. And so he's trying to tell his followers, hey, it's been great. People have been wanting to be around us. It's not going to stay great. It's going to get difficult. It's going to get hard. He begins to explain to them that he's going to be arrested by the Jewish leaders, and they're going to spit on him. They're going to flog him. They're going to beat him within an inch of his life, and then they will actually indeed kill him. And then on the third day, he will rise. And so as Jesus is explaining this to them, because like these are the guys that are going to, like, he's going to hand the keys to this whole enterprise over to here very shortly. And so he's having this tender moment. In the midst of this tender moment, as he's explaining all these terrible things are going to happen, take a look at what happens next. It says, then, like right then, like he just got done saying he'd be spit on and flogged and eventually killed. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. And you're like, really? Like that's the question amidst the flogging and killing that you want to come up with? And they're like, yeah, that flogging and killing, man, that sucks, man. Your life's going to be really hard. But let's not be negative now. Jesus, will you do whatever we want you to do for us before you leave? I mean, that'd be really cool. And so this is the moment that Jesus is having right here. And if you're a parent, you've had one of these moments, right? I mean, maybe it was, you know, at the dinner table this week, or you were kneeling down next to your daughter's bed, and you were just in like one of those moments where you're just like laying in a really important principle into your son or daughter's life, and you're like, honey, I just want you to never forget what I'm telling you right now. Or son, just, you know, just always remember. And you're just like, man, that was a proud dad moment right there. And your kids look up and they're like, Dad, did you realize when you talk, your left side droops more than your right side when you talk? Have you ever noticed that, Dad? And like that was the moment for Jesus right there. You're like, really? Like you're having this tender moment, and in the midst of that, that's what you point out? So Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? And they replied, let us sit at your right and the other on your left in glory. I mean, they're like, you know, we know you're the king. Like, you're the top dog. We just want to be number two and number three. Like, we know you're Belichick. He's the king. We just want to be Josh McDaniels and Mike Patricia. Like, we're not asking.
They've got red ones. Illegal procedure. I just didn't like it.
What was it? Belichick's the king. I mean, what are you not to like about that?
You are not to say Belichick within the walls of Cross Point, 3-point penalty.
Oh, jeez. I mean, all they wanted was like the corner room in the office. They didn't want the penthouse. I mean, they didn't want the top dog. They just wanted to be like two and three. I mean, they were kind of like, don't tell me the sky's the limit when there's footprints on the moon.
Oh, look at that. He got the random phrase in.
So, meanwhile, while he's entertaining these two, take a look at what's going on with the other 10. It says, when the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. And it was logical to think that, right? They're like, geez, you guys are so insensitive. Like, Jesus is about to die. And you guys are like, hey, can you do something we want? Instead of, you know, don't worry about the dying thing. But then we find out that's not why they're indignant. You know why they were indignant? They were indignant because they're like, man, we want the corner office too. What about these? We don't want these guys to be ahead of us. Hey, we want to be number two and number three. So Jesus looks at them and he calls them all together. He's like, obviously you've not been paying attention. Take a look at what it says. It says, so Jesus called them together. He's like, come on, lean in. Get in here. Take a knee. Lean in. Let's go over this again. And then this is where he spells out what great leadership is. All right, this is where he gives us this snapshot of what it means to be a leader in a way that makes massive impact. He says, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them, meaning you know how leadership works. You know that when you're in authority, like you leverage it based on what's best for you. Like if you're the top dog, everybody works for you, right? In fact, in our kind of org chart in America, here's how it goes. If you're the boss, that's you on top, right? Or if you're the head of a department or the head of the family, whatever it is, you're on top and you have direct reports and those people work. They have a job to do, right? But they ultimately work for you. And those people have direct reports under them, and they have jobs to do. But ultimately, if we're honest, we're like, but they're ultimately working for the top dog, right? And the apostles are going, exactly, that's how it works. That's why we want to be number two and number three. We don't want to be underneath all those people. And so Jesus, I'm just picturing him kind of smile, perhaps, and he says something fascinating. He says, not so with you. In other words, this is how it goes in corporate America. This is kind of the model we think. When you're a great leader, everybody works underneath you, and they ultimately work for you. But he says, not so with you. And then Jesus, in his characteristic way, he flips this thing on its head, totally turns it upside down. And he's like, hey, not so with you. Instead, or in contrast, whoever wants to become great among you, pause, really important thing right here. To be great means you're the leader. To be great means you have authority over people, people under you. You're going to impact their lives. And he looks at him. He's like, do you guys want to be the boss? And they're like, well, yeah. Like, he's like, do you think you can, like, lead the whole department when I hand it over to you? They're like, yeah, we think we can. He says, okay, it's good to be great, but if you're going to do this, man, you got to do it the way I would do it. It's the only way to have the kind of impact that this thing needs. And he goes on. He says, whoever wants to be great among you must be your, and he deflates their ego, must be their servant. And then he goes on, and whoever wants to be first, as in big you, as in you're the guy on top, you're the gal on top, whenever a big decision needs to be made, everybody looks to you, they want to know what the decision is, if you're that person, he says, whoever wants to be first must be, and look at this phrase, slave of all. And the apostles are going, holy cow, that's not going to work. Jesus, that's ridiculous. That's not how things operate in the world. I mean, you might have this grand idea, and it might work for you, but it's not going to work for everybody else. They're like, that's stupid. And Jesus, he says, no. He says, if you want to be a great leader, it's not about exercising your authority by using everyone underneath you. When you're a great leader, you exercise your authority for the benefit of everyone underneath you.
Touchdown!
Yeah.
7 points. 7 points for a great message, 3 points for use of the random phrase. However, we have the 3-point deduction for the illegal procedure.
It was just Belichick.
So we have a final score of Walters 7, Constantine 0. End of the first quarter.
All right, there you go. End of the first quarter in the books. And Chris, Walters started out pretty strong.
Yeah, with the exception of the Belichick, McDaniels, and Patricia does not work there anymore. I don't even know what he's talking about, but I have to admit, I can't believe he worked that random phrase, and that was really strong, Eric.
Yeah, impressive. Though, if history is any predictor of what's to come, he's not going to be able to keep this lead.
Well, we'll see here soon.
All right, folks. We know you didn't come for the teaching this morning, so we'll be back with the second quarter right after this commercial break.
All right, Vince.
Let's light this candle, Julie. Let's go.
Your turn to try to score. Random phrase, please.
Random phrase. Okay. And these are random, right?
Random.
I'm sure they are. Okay. Oh, I like this one. He is cooler than the other side of the pillow.
That's a classic.
Yeah, ooh, I can do booyah, that. 90 Sports Center, ladies and gentlemen.
Vince, let's do this.
Exactly what I planned on doing. Well, hey, listen, we've been in this series, as Kurt talked about this concept of follow the leader, right, since the beginning of the calendar year. And, you know, I know for a lot of you, this probably lands in a few different spots. I know for me personally, right, I've been a follower of Christ for pretty much my entire adult life. I made a decision to follow when I was a teenager. But every once in a while, you need that reminder to kind of get back on track. And that's kind of where I'm at, right? This whole concept of just simply following. And so for some of you, though, you may not be at that same spot. You may be on the outside looking in, trying to kind of figure this thing out of what it truly means to follow. And I think some of the really kind of key and important elements of this is it's a simple task, right? There's not a whole bunch of rules that you have to commit to or get done, rather, before you can follow. There's not a big checklist in the church that says, hey, before you walk through these four doors, here's all the things and the requirements you got to meet. Jesus meets us right where we're at. And all he asks us to do, no matter where that spot is you just follow, just to simply take that next step. And once again, I know this lands in a lot of different spots, but I know that the one overarching theme for all of us in this place, because we all ask ourselves this question, whether we have followed for many years or whether we're new to this whole thing is, okay, I'm making this commitment, I'm taking this step, I'm on the outside looking in, I'm trying to figure it out. What's next? What's the next thing for me? And as we kind of look to build this out, I want to give you some really key elements to this because I think this is valuable and important. You see, following is not passive. Jesus doesn't want us to be passive. He doesn't want us to come in here, sit down, and do nothing. He doesn't want us to just absorb stuff and then not do anything with it. In fact, you see this play throughout the Bible. Every single time that Jesus, whether it's the disciples, whether it's, you know, Peter, James, John, whether it's Matthew as a tax collector, whether it's the woman at the well, every time he asks people to follow, what are they doing? They're active. They're doing something. And see, I think that's a key element, that Jesus wants us to be active as we follow. And here's the real truth, and here's where this kind of comes together here this morning. It's this simple fact that in order for us to be an active follower, we got to be an active leader. Now you might think to yourself, now wait a second, that kind of contradicts itself, right? How am I supposed to follow and lead at the same time? Don't they go in separate paths? No, they go together. And I want you to think about this, and we'll use today's context, right, the Super Bowl. You've got two teams. Each one of those teams has a head coach, right? Head coach has underneath them offensive, defensive coordinator, position coaches. They're all leaders of their certain group, yet they follow the head coach, right? You have players on the field. You have a quarterback that's really probably more than likely the leader of the offense. Maybe you've got an offensive lineman who's the leader of the offensive line. Typically, it's the center. On defense, you have the exact same type of thing. You've got defensive leaders, linebackers, safeties. There are people on that team that are leaders, yet the group is following. The two have to come together and go together. I think this is such a key element and really builds into the character that Jesus has set for us. I want you to think about this, right? We talk about leadership in corporate America. Look, I want to dispel the truth. Leadership is for every single person that sits in these chairs today, every single person in this room. Forget about the corporate structure. Forget about, well, I need to lead a team. I've got to be in charge of a group. I got to have a big fancy title. That's not it. Leadership is for every one of us. Students, I want to speak to you for a second. You are leaders. In fact, your leadership role is more important than anyone else's in this room. You have an opportunity to shape the group that you interact with. You have a chance to take a step forward. What a powerful position to be in. Your leaders. Parents, man, your leaders in your home. When you sit at that kitchen table at night, right, kitchen table leadership takes over. Having those meals together, talking amongst one another, and really building into one another, that's leadership. Forget about corporate America for a minute, man, right in our own homes, right in our own communities. And we see this played out, because if you think about what a leader really is, and I want you to do this for me this morning. I want you to think about somebody that had an impact in your life. Could be a teacher, a coach. I want it to be somebody that you actually interacted with. I don't want it to be Gandhi or Ronald Reagan or somebody else that you've never met to say, well, that person had an impact. Maybe they did, but I'm talking a direct hit, a direct impact. And I want you to think about that person. Once again, a coach, a teacher, a mentor, somebody at work. Think about the qualities that made them a great leader. Think about those qualities for a minute. First of all, pretty high likelihood they were smart, right? They were a subject matter expert. No matter what it was, they probably were somewhat smart. The second thing is they were probably intuitive. They always seemed to kind of know the right direction to take, the right question to ask, the right way to answer a question. They had something about them that kind of led them in that path. They were somewhat personable, right? People connected with them, not just you, but others. And they had this charismatic personality, right? This charisma that just made people want to get in behind and follow. Jim Collins writes this book, and some of you may have read it, some of you may have seen it. Maybe you're like me and picked up the back cover and looked at it. I actually did read this book because it really speaks to what it means to be a great leader. And what Jim Collins is doing is he's saying, hey, look, man, I want to take a look at organizations and I want to see what takes them from being average or okay or just good enough to great. So he looked at a list of 1,400 companies. And these 1,400 companies, man, I'll tell you what, they were all good, but there were some that really were great. They were way off the charts. So he took a look at the leaders of these companies and said, man, it's got to be on the leadership. And so he started looking at this hierarchy and he created this whole thing. Because guess what? Those leaders were all really smart, right? You can't be the leader of a company, CEO of a company, unless you're pretty smart. Right? They were probably somewhat intuitive. They were personable. They got others to follow. They were even charismatic, and that's where he thought, man, that's what separates them. But he found these 11 companies, and when he looked at these 11 companies, you know what separated them from everybody else? Because they had good people, smart people, intuitive, charismatic. No, the leaders of those companies were humble. They were humble. And so here's the thing, right? He found that these leaders had this humility about them because they didn't put their success in front of the benefit of the team. They didn't care about their own goals. They cared about the team's goals. They didn't care, hey, what's in it for me? It's what am I doing to help my team? How am I pulling this together? Instead of placing blame for mistakes, they took accountability. Now, I don't know about you, but Kurt mentioned, man, he'd love to have your boss here today, right? Whoever that might be, he or she, have them in this room, send them a podcast. This is the type of leader I want to work for. I want to work for someone, yeah, that has all those qualities we just talked about, but is humble, doesn't put their needs before mine. Right, somebody that's really cool. You might even say there's someone that's even cooler than the other side of the pillow.
He did it. Yeah, he did it.
Somehow that came together, and you thought these were random. But here's the thing, right? These fibers are woven throughout history. They're even all the way back. These principles are laid out in the Bible. We talk about Paul a lot in here. Paul's the writes about two-thirds of the New Testament. And Paul, in his letter to the church in Philippi, the Philippians, he's really kind of giving them in the early chapters some instructions in how to build this thing out. And is really speaking to those that are going to be in a leadership position. And I love how he says this in chapter 2, verse 3, he says this. Don't do anything from selfish ambition. Imagine if your boss did that, right? Don't do anything from selfish ambition or a cheap desire to boast. Like, hey, look at me. Look at all the great things I did. No, don't do that. He's really specific here because these next three words, check them out. But be humble towards one another and always consider others better than you. Always consider others better than yourselves. Now, here's what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean you're passive. It doesn't mean you settle. It doesn't mean you're enabler. It doesn't mean that you let people just walk all over you. No, that's not what it means. It means that you're humble in your leadership. And that's the quality that separates great from good. I had a chance last weekend. My son and I drove up to Michigan to do a school visit. And we were driving back. And parents, I'm going to give you a little bit of advice. In our car, it's driver's choice. I was driving. So we're not listening to, you know, Top 40. We're not listening to Katy Perry. And I'm not making offense to anybody. But we're listening to what I want to listen to. It's how it works. So here's the deal, right? It's either going to be Foo Fighters or it's going to be talk radio, sports radio more than likely, or I'm going to listen to a podcast. And I had an opportunity to listen to this podcast that I hadn't because I wanted to hear this coach speak. See, I love coaches because they're building a brand, they build a team, and guess what? It's their accountability that's right on the forefront. And so I listened to this podcast by Jay Wright. If you don't know who Jay Wright is, beside the fact that he's strikingly handsome and he's a great dresser and he's Italian, the other great thing about Jay Wright is he's the Villanova basketball coach. Villanova's won two of the last three national championships for men's basketball. And he goes through this whole thing. Now, think about this. He's building a team, building a society that comes together, right? It's a small group of people. It's not just the players on the court, but it's everybody that's underneath him. He's the leader. He's got other leaders within. He's got leaders on his team, leaders in the locker room, leaders in the training room. Everybody builds into this. And he puts this whole thing out and he says this. And this is what I love. And he's got this whole mantra about himself. And and the question was asked, man, how do you keep this thing going? And he points to his wrist and he's got a wristband. At least that's what he says. He's got this wristband on. It says, and in other words, it says, be humble and be hungry. Think about that for a minute. This is a guy that's a leader. Great dresser, right? $1,000 Italian suit. Be humble, be hungry. And he goes on to say this. If you get caught up in your success, which is your pride, right, your boastfulness, then you forget what it took, man, the hard work that it took to get there. Have this attitude, and I love this, man. Have this attitude about yourself and towards each other. Now, listen, I don't know Jay Wright personally, but I got a feeling that Jay Wright's probably got a little Christian education in his background, right? These aren't new concepts to him. These are concepts that are woven throughout. And he looks back to probably Philippians, chapter 2, verse 3, where it talks about being humble. Be humble, be hungry. Because when you do that, that's how you build a team. And most importantly, that's how you make a team successful.
Home run!
Close.
7 points for a great message. 3 points for use of the random phrase. And so that gives us a score of Walters 7, Constantine 10.
Yes. Woo!
End of the first half. Time for the seventh inning stretch.
All right, well. We've got a tight one, don't we? It's a
sure
close
do.
Game. Your reactions, Chris?
Yeah, all around great first half. Their random phrase incorporation really was outstanding, mm-hmm. Eric.
Yeah, and we haven't scared anybody off, as far as we can tell.
Not yet.
Well, folks, the only thing between us and an amazing halftime show is just another quick commercial break. And you're still with us. This is a good sign. Welcome back to the second half of the Game Day Teach-Off. Chris, what are you looking for in these next two quarters?
Well, I'm trying to heal from that first off, Eric. But second off, I can't help believe, but some of these players left some points on the field. If you're going to win the championship, you've got to leave it on the field, and you've got to leave the Patriots' comments at home, Walters.
Indeed. Let's head on back down to the field for the start of the second half.
Vince, you'll have the ball, start of the second half. Please pick your random phrase.
Will do. Oh, that's for Walters. There we go. He will have no idea what that means. Not that this is any better. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Okay.
All right.
Do we even know who Ted is?
I
appreciate the politeness in the comments.
Yeah, Ted seems like a nice guy. Ted, thanks for coming this morning.
Vince, your ball.
We'll see how this goes. So in the second quarter, we just got done talking about this whole concept of humility and humility and leadership and what that looks like and how that gets represented in these great leaders that take these companies and take these organizations or teams and just take them to the next level and build that trajectory. And so I want to kind of continue to build that out this morning because I think there's a real big tie-in that we can kind of pull this all the whole thing together and really kind of send this message home is what this looks like for us in our own lives. I want you to go back and think a little bit about what we just got done talking about and think about, once again, that person that had an impact in your life. Teacher, coach, mentor, somebody at work, whatever it is, right? And we just got done talking about all the qualities, right, we listed out. They were smart, intuitive, they were personable, they were charismatic. But I bet you if you boil it down, that they were humble. In fact, I think the bottom line here is they always put others' needs before themselves. Do you ever find that? As you looked at those people, as you kind of thought about them, right, they put your needs before their own. They had other things going on in their lives, trust me. They weren't just sitting around waiting for you, but they always seemed to have time, and it wasn't about them, it wasn't about their glory, they didn't need to boast, they didn't need to say, hey, look at me. It was about building into you, kind of coming up underneath and building that strong foundation. So I want to look at how that plays out and really kind of take this to the next level, and this whole idea about being a humble leader is really this whole concept on servant leadership. John Maxwell wrote a book on this whole entire subject and really does a great job of kind of building those pieces out for us. And John Maxwell not only teaches this on a corporate level, but really kind of tries to pull back in these elements of the Bible, these elements of Christianity, and how that builds together and how that comes together for us in our lives. And I love this quote because I think it sums it up, and it sums it up perfectly what servant leadership looks like. He goes on and he says this. He says, when you are humble and you add value to people, right? When you're humble, you actually, you can't have one without the other. You're humble, you're going to add value to people because you're putting their needs first. He says this. He says, first of all, there's four things. Number one, you lift them up. Number two, you help them advance, right? Getting there. Number three is you make them part of something bigger than themselves. And then I love this last one. I love how this pulls together. And you assist them in becoming who they were meant to be and who they were made to be. How awesome is that, right? That totally defines what we're looking at. And if we take this back and go back 2,000 years ago, this is exactly what Paul is saying. If we continue that scripture and we continue on in Philippians chapter 2, verses 4 and 5, man, he continues to go on. He says this because he says, look, this is my interpretation of this. I think he thinks that, hey, I don't know if you heard me the first time when I defined, hey, to be humble, so I'm going to take it down to the next level for you. All right? I'm going to reduce it to the ridiculous because here's how this works. He says, hey, and don't look out, and look out, rather, for one another's interest, not just your own.
See, Paul understands this, man. You have your own interests. You have your own goals, right? I certainly do. You all do. You have things you got going on during the day. You're not just sitting around waiting for the phone to ring for somebody to ask you for your advice or to lean into them or build into them or be humble or care. No, they're not. Everyone's got their own interests. You have your own goals. But man, when the opportunity strikes, put in your mindset, hey, be humble, be a leader, be someone to build into this person and worry about their interests instead of your own. Then I love verse 5, because this becomes a choice, right? He says this, the attitude you should have is the one that Christ Jesus had, right? Attitude is a great word. I love that word because attitude represents a choice. Two ways you can go with this. You either have this great attitude and be humble, or you can have this other pathway that you want to go down. But I'm telling you, Paul's telling you in this scripture, hey, you want to be successful, right? We've seen this played out. Be humble, be hungry, have the attitude of service, right? What can I do for others and not my own interest? And here's the crazy concept about servant leadership, right? This all sounds really, really simple, right? But for some reason, our society goes against this. And this isn't some political thing by any means, because we've been screwing this up for years. We're all about ourselves. Look at our commercials. Look at all the things that we do in our life. It's about building ourselves up. But what if we just took a step back, right? Took a step back and said, man, how can I build into someone else? How can I help another person? How can I add value? Because here's the thing, right? It doesn't mean that you forget about yourself. It doesn't mean that you just lie down and let people walk over you. It doesn't mean that you're not, thinking ahead. It doesn't mean any of that. It doesn't mean you lack intentionality. But where you're intentional is that you don't ask, hey, what's in it for me? It's more about what can I do for the good of the team. I like to define it as this, and I heard this phrase several years ago, and I really liked it. And it had nothing to do with servant leadership. It was more about management and kind of how that builds out into one another. But I love this quote, and I kind of put two of them together, because this is how I define it. And I think this is the simple breakdown of it is this. Servant leadership is about helping others get to a place they can't get to on their own. Think about that for a minute. That quote from John Maxwell, right, where he talks, help them get to a place they were meant to be. It's the same thing. Help others get to a place that they couldn't get to on their own. Now, I know that this morning's been mildly entertaining. There's even been some content, some education, some things that you learn. This reminds me very much of a TED Talk, right, where I'm doing all the talking and there's no participation, right? That's how those things work, right? There's nothing coming back. Say whatever I want. So I think I would be remiss if I didn't thank you for coming to my TED Talk this morning.
He did it. There you go.
I don't know how. A smattering of applause. That's just fantastic. So, sorry, we'll keep it. You'll have plenty of time later on. So here's the deal, right? On Thursday night, I had this great concept that I tried to tie together. And you ever have one of those moments where you put together an email or you leave somebody a message, you hit send, whatever it might be, and you're like, you know what? It wasn't necessarily bad, but it wasn't where I wanted it to go. That didn't really kind of pull it together. So I thought for a moment, hey, you know what? Here's what I'm going to do. I had this whole big thing around this letter that Frank Reich, for those of you who don't know, is the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. And he puts together this letter to the fans. And I'm telling you, if you haven't had a chance to read it, it is awesome. And it talks about this whole mantra, this whole mindset of what it means to go 1-0, to take these steps, right? We've talked about follow the leader, take these steps. And it's got this great piece in it where he talks about this idea of just getting 1% better every day. And he talks about it in the context of being a head coach and what it means to the team and to the players in that locker room, and then kind of gives us the hope that we can instill that in our own lives. There's nothing wrong with that letter, but I realized something as I got done. Dude, you've never been head coach of the Indianapolis Colts or any NFL team for that matter. What authority do you have? And I thought to myself, you know what, you're right. And I couldn't land it. So I went back and I thought, all right, man, how do I put this in my own context? And so I should probably give you a little bit of insight into really my life outside of the four walls of this building, Monday through Saturday, is that I've been with the same company for 24 years. Now, I know what you're thinking. This guy must have started when he was 14. Relax for a minute. For those of you who are not good at math, that makes me a lot younger than you think. I actually started when I was 16. So here's the deal. For 24 years, I've been with the same company, and for 18 of those years, I was in a leadership role in a variety of different capacities, all related to sales, and I managed a team of people anywhere from 7 to as many as 14, 15 people at any one particular time, and I'll tell you what, I loved it. I thrived in it. Man, it really kind of built into what I was about, and it gave me this great opportunity to build into others. all the things that I really enjoy. A couple of years ago, I made a decision that was really, really difficult for me, is that I needed to make a change in my life. I needed to do something a little bit different. I was young. I didn't want to continue on the same track and do this for another 20 years. So I had this great opportunity to take a role that wasn't a team leadership role, but an individual contributor role. And at the time, it was the most difficult thing because I missed the team. I missed coaching the team and struggled with that kind of back and forth. Until one day someone said to me, he said, "Hey, dude, look, here's the deal. Just because you don't lead a team doesn't mean you don't have impact." Kind of put my words right back in my mouth because I just got done telling you about 20 minutes ago, hey, you don't have to be big time in an organization. You don't have to have a fancy title that says AVP or RVP or vice president. It doesn't have to have any of that. You have an impact every single place you go. And then the next thing he said to me was so hit home. He said, "Look, all your experiences, both good and bad, can build in and help others." I'm like, man, I really needed to hear that at that moment. And so I had this unbelievable opportunity this last week that I didn't even expect. And that's kind of how God works, right? He works when you least expect it, meets you in the place where you're at. So I was trying to kind of put this thing together. And I get this phone call from a rep of ours down in South Florida. Somebody that never reported to me, but I've worked on special projects over these past 2 years in this new role. And his name is Chad. Chad comes to me and he starts asking me for my advice on a variety of different topics. And it really all boils down to the fact that the leader that he has doesn't care, always putting his needs before those of others. And so Chad's struggling with this stuff. Now, I'd like to tell you that I gave Chad some unbelievable worldly advice and that all of a sudden everything's better. That's not how it works, right? It takes time. It takes those steps. It takes that 1-0 mentality, that get 1% better every day, which is where I left him. But one of the things I realized was this, and this is really where this hit home, this whole idea, this whole concept was this. See, and many of you have heard this before, but people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Think about that for a minute. You've all heard it before. Listen, I had other projects going on that day. I have a bipolar boss who was ready to go on a 2-week vacation to Hawaii. He's asking me for 3 or 4 things to be done by Friday. He's had all week to get with me. I wasn't concerned about my own interest in that moment. I was concerned more about what Chad had going on in his life. Don't care how much you know until how much they care. Until they know how much you care. And that's really where we're at. That's the point where we come together. And whether you take this and you kind of build it out in your own life, whether you take those next steps, whether you kind of go on this approach of leadership or whatever it might be, the one thing that I'd ask you to do is I'd ask you to try to look for those opportunities in your life as you go about this next week in school. Hey, students, I'm talking to you, man, because you've got the greatest opportunity to have a massive impact. Kids going off to college, you have a massive opportunity. Parents, you got a massive opportunity to have an impact. We all have an impact in this room. And where does that land for us? So as you go about your weeks this week, hey, where can I look for opportunities to build into others? Where can I look for opportunities to add value? And most importantly, as a servant leader, where can I help others get to a place that they couldn't get to on their own? Where could I help someone get to a place that they can't get to on their own? Yeah. What were you doing?
I was on Pinterest.
Okay.
Touchdown, 7 points for...
The touchdown.
It was a good right. message. Yep. Right. 3 points for use of the random phrase. And so we have an end of the third quarter score of...
It's right on the scoreboard. It says 20, okay. Me, 7.
Walters, 7. Constantine, 20.
Woo! All right. We are heading to the fourth quarter. And Chris, this might be too big of a deficit for Walters to overcome.
Yeah, at this point, I think Kurt's better off taking a seat. But if I know anything about Walters, he's definitely not going out without a fight and potentially a Christmas vacation reference.
All right. Walters, fourth quarter, you got to do this. Here's your random phrase. And you know what? If you can hurry up, I just realized I have to be at Foot Locker in about a half hour.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anything for you, Julie.
Okay. And that's the tea.
And that's the tea.
That's the random phrase. And that's Chris, I understand this is like a hip millennial phrase, and you being a millennial, can you explain?
Yeah, as the only millennial on the stage, let me explain it to you. I have no idea. I don't think Walters does either.
No, so. And here's the thing. If we know anything from his past, He doesn't have to know what he's talking about in order for him to say it.
Kirk, good luck. Thing. You're going to need it.
All right. You know, when Jim Collins said these things about servant leadership, about this whole idea of there being personality traits
that is a serious illegal procedure.
Out there, big.
This is not looking good for you.
I just took your power.
So when Jim Collins, you know, when he wrote this book a number of years ago, looking at these 1,400 companies, he really was just trying to say, hey, what's the common thread? He really did think it was persona. He thought it was charisma. He thought there's something that sets these leaders apart. Vince has been laying out over these last few minutes, humility is key on this. In fact, here's what he says in another quote. He says, a level 5 leader is characterized as embodying a paradoxical mix of personal humility and professional will. And so it's not just roll over at the door. It's not just, you know, let everybody go first in front of you and let me just stand here not to get anything done. There's a will to it. He says, they are ambitious to be sure, but ambitious first and foremost for the company, not themselves. You know, for those of you who are regulars around here, you might look up here and you might, you know, identify me as the pastor or the preacher here at Cross Point, which is a part of what I do. It's a small part of my job. But the main thing that I do each and every week is I run the organization at Cross Point. It's my main job. And so, you know, we have like 350 volunteers that make this place go every month. We have 50 or so volunteer leaders that lead different initiatives around here. We have 11 part and full-time staff. And so I'm a boss. I actually boss people around. It's part of what I do every single week. And yet I have grown in this bossing and in this leadership over the years. It's not something that just comes natural. And one of the key things that I learned a number of years ago that really took my leadership up and to the right is when I learned this one simple question. I want to give this question to you today because this is a very simple walkout that you can use as you go out into whatever and wherever you lead this week. And I guarantee you, this question, I just believe that when you use this question with the people that you lead, the people that you serve, it will change the culture and the temperature of that environment. So here's the question. What can I do to help? What can I do to help? Very, very simple question. Now, just think about this for a moment. If your boss walked in tomorrow morning and they came by your cube or your office and said, hey, what can I do to help today? You'd pass out, wouldn't you? You'd literally fall over because that's not what they're supposed to do. That's not what leaders do. But see, this question, one of the challenges we have in any organization, whether that be the marketplace, whether that be the organization of our family, the organization of a marriage, the organization of our homeowners association, any of the like, is how do we create collaboration? How do we get people to get out of their silos, their individual roles, and the things that we have as responsibilities, and how do we get outside of those things amidst having to fulfill those things and work together as a team? And so when you ask the question with people that you lead, what can I do to help? I'll tell you what, you know what you're saying when you say that? You're saying, how can I give you me for you? Meaning, how can I, you know, whatever authority I have in this enterprise, how can I bring that into helping you move things forward? How can I bring responsibility that you have? How can I bring resources that I have and influence that I have to help bear in helping you be, you know, benefit the company and be productive? How can I bring you, me, for your benefit and for the benefit of everyone? Now think about this for a moment. This would change the culture of your company. Right? Some of you, you're working for companies and you're looking all the time because you don't have people like this leading you. They're always looking out for their own benefit. Tell you what, this question, what can I do to help? It will not only change the culture of a leadership organization, it will change the way you serve your clients. It will change the way you serve the people that you are there to provide services for. It'll change everything about the enterprise. This past fall, our family traveled to one of our favorite destinations. We go to Disney every single fall over Thanksgiving break. And it's kind of a time for us to unwind before we hit the crazy Christmas season. And we were staying at the Wilderness Lodge this year, and one particular day we came back to our home or our condo, and found something unexpected. My wife, I'd actually gone to the front desk. My wife went up to the room, and she sent me these photos. She said, "Hey, since you're going to the desk, you might want to show them this." Now get this, the entire floor, we're on the third floor, the entire floor sewage apparently had been stopped up right next to our drain. And so while we were gone for 8 hours, it flowed up and through our kitchen into our condo. All right. And so we had everybody's sewer coming into our room. And so I'm at the front desk at that moment. I show it to the front desk, and the lady was like, "Oh my gosh, Mr. Walters, we'll get our team on it. We're gonna get you a new room. You go up there and we'll meet you up there." Well, I love Disney culture. We've studied Disney culture here. We just feel like there's a lot of principles we can walk away with. I walked to our building, three buildings down, three floors up. By the time I got there, get this, there was not one, not two, and not even four, but five managers waiting outside our door by the time I got there. They had the head of the hotel, the entire resort. They had the assistant manager of the entire resort. They had the head of engineering, the head of housekeeping, and the head of concierge services ready with bellboys to help move our stuff. And the head manager asked me the question, "What, Mr. Walters, can we do to help?" And I said, "I don't know. Let me go in. Let me get a lay of the land." We started packing stuff up. They said, "We're going to be out here until you guys are ready to move. We've got a room ready for you. You just let us know how we can help." I walk into our room. My kids see me walk in. They go, "Oh, my gosh, Dad is going to flip out." Now, why would they say that? Now, maybe because I have flipped out at times over such things. But the primary reason was earlier in the summer, we traveled to another hotel in a different location, and we had a problem with our room, and we talked to the front desk about it, and the problem persisted. And by the fourth or fifth time down, the manager laughed at me as I was talking to him, and I flipped out. And I think rightfully so. But I asked my kids, "Why do you think I didn't flip out in this moment?" And they said, "Well, because they were there to help." I'm like, "Exactly." In fact, the manager called me later in the day after they moved us and got us set and took care of a number of other things. And she called me personally on my cell phone. She said, "Hey, Mr. Walters, I just want to make sure everything is good and there's nothing else we can do." And I told her, I said, "Man, we've studied Disney culture. I just experienced it. And I want to tell you, I lead an organization. It's nowhere near the magnitude of Disney, but I know things don't always go as planned. But I'm going to tell you something, you guys, that the key isn't preventing bad things from happening. It's stepping in and responding when things do. And you guys were just masterful." She told me? She said, "I've worked here 6 years, and yet I haven't worked a single day since then because I love what I do, and I get to show up and serve people every single day." This is the manager of the entire resort hotel. What can I do to help? It'll change the culture. It changes the temperature of a service culture. It changes the temperature of a leadership culture. It'll change the temperature of your family. It'll change the temperature of your marriage. And so Jim Collins and the Stephen Coveys and the John Maxwells, man, they get this. They understand that if you implement this servant humility when you lead, not only will you benefit, but it's going to benefit everyone. And everyone wins as a result. Because everyone wins when we use our authority, not for ourselves, but to benefit those under our authority. And that's the T right there.
Ooh, look at that. He got the random phrase in.
He still has no idea what that means.
Now, Here's this little conversation that Jesus was having with his followers. Here's how it all wraps up. Here's how Mark reports it. And if you've been sitting here this morning going, "Oh gosh, this is what I expect in church. I mean, this is not going to work in the real world. I mean, how do I go and get anything done if I'm going to be asking the question, what can I do to help?" Take a look at what Jesus says right here. He totally removes all your excuses and my excuses. All right, here's what he says. He says, "For even the Son of Man," meaning himself, "even the Son of Man did not come to be served." All right, he goes on. And it's like, how far did he take it? How far did he go to not just say, "Hey, I'm the big guy on top and everybody's here to serve me"? Well, take a look at what he says. He says, "The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his," what does he say right there? Yeah, his life. Not the moment, not the hour, not even 10 minutes. But his life as a ransom for all of us. And he says, "Now you don't have to give your life, but I tell you what, if you'll just follow me, if you'll follow me, be just looking for opportunities to serve those that you lead, if you'll follow me in this, they're going to be better, and you're going to be better, and everyone's going to win." And so here's the question. Here's what I want us to think through as we wrap this up. What would that look like in your little corner of the world tomorrow? I mean, as you get up and you go to work or as you go home this afternoon, what would it look like if you were just to simply lead with the question, hey, what can I do to help? And this is one of our next steps. On the back of our connection card, we give next steps every week. And there's something about deciding and saying, hey, I'm going to mark that. I'm going to do that. I'm going to try to walk that out this week. There's some other ones on there. Maybe it's returning or you want to get involved in a group. But I tell you what, this question, it's so convicting to me because, you know, I struggle with this. I'm a type A. I'm a driven. I have a list every day. I have 20 things I want to get done, and I only have time for 10 of them. This is every day of my work life, and yet I boss people around. I lead people. And I've had to train myself that the best way to form a team, the best way to help this place be successful is I've trained myself at the end of every conversation to simply ask, what can I do to help? And then it requires me to follow up on those things that I can bring my leverage to. But I tell you what, it changes the game. And so what would this look like in your corner of the world? What would it look like if you began this afternoon or tomorrow when you show up at the office? And think about what this would look like in your marriage. I mean, if you just, you know, and you're mutually leading each other in a marriage, but what if you said, hey, honey, and not how can you serve me, but what can I do to help? How can I bring what I have or what I'm gifted with to bear weight into this situation? With your kids, when they come home with maybe a project, and I'm not saying do your work for your kids. I'm just saying when they're struggling, what if it was a, hey, what can I do to help you move this thing down the road? I tell you what, it would change the temperature of our culture. All right, so let's rise up on this week, all right? Let's rise up on this. Let's stand to our feet right now. In fact, we're going to do that. We're going to rise. And let's start leading with this question, what can I do to help this week?
Touchdown, Walters! Oh, yeah. 7 points for a great message, 3 points for use of the random phrase. Final score, Walters 17, Constantine 20! Woo.